Next, the husband spotted the concreter driving around town in the car that he had slaved to buy. Up to this point, you could tell the story as a country and western song, a rueful tale of love betrayed, a little bit whiny, a little bit sweet. But 10 months later, just after dark, on a September evening in 2005, while the discarded husband was driving his sons back to their mother from a Father's Day outing, his old white Commodore swerved off the highway, barely 5 minutes from home, and plunged into a dam. He freed himself from the car and swam to the bank. The car sank to the bottom, and all the children drowned. I saw it on the TV news. Night, low foliage, water, misty and black, blurred lights, a chopper, men in high vis and helmets. Something very bad here. Something frightful. Oh, Lord, let this be an accident. Anyone can see the place where the children died. You drive southwest out of Melbourne on the Prince's Highway, the road that encircles the continent. You bypass Geelong, resist the call of the Surf Coast turnoff, and keep going inland in the direction of Colac on the great volcanic plain that stretches across southwestern Victoria. In August 2006, after a magistrate at a Geelong hearing had committed Robert Farquharson to stand trial on 3 charges of murder, I headed out that way one Sunday morning with an old friend to keep me company. Her husband had recently left her. Her hair was dyed a defiant red, but she had that racked look, hollow with sadness. We were women in our 60s. Each of us had found it in herself to endure, but also to inflict, the pain and humiliation of divorce. It was a spring day. We passed Geelong and were soon flying along between paddocks yellow with caperweed, their fence lines marked by the occasional windbreak of dark cypresses. Across the huge sky sailed flat-bottomed clouds of brilliant white. My companion and I had spent years of our childhoods in this region. We were familiar with its melancholy beauty, the grand, smooth sweeps of its terrain. Rolling west along the 2-lane highway, we opened the windows and let the air stream through. 4 or 5 kilometres short of Winchelsea, we spotted ahead of us the long, leisurely rise of a railway overpass. Was this the place? Talk ceased. We cruised up the man-made hill. From the top, we looked down and saw ahead and to the right of the road a body of tan water in a paddock. Not the business-like square of a farm dam, but oval-shaped, feminine, like an elongated teardrop, thinly fringed with small trees. Its southern bank lay parallel with the northern edge of the highway, 20 or 30 metres from the bitumen. I had imagined the trajectory of Farquharson's car as a simple drift off the left side of the highway, but to plunge into this body of water on the wrong side of the road, the car would have had to veer over the centre white line and cut across the eastbound lane with its oncoming traffic. As we sped down the Winchelsea side of the overpass, forcing ourselves to keep glancing to the right, we saw little white crosses, 3 of them, knee-deep in grass between the road and the fence. We flew past as if we did not have the right to stop. We had a vague idea that 6,000 people lived in Winchelsea, but a sign at the entrance to the township gave its population as 1,180. And by the time we'd rolled down the dip to the bluestone bridge that spanned the Winchelsea River, then up the other side and past a row of shops and a primary school, the outer limits of the town were already in view. In a place this size, everyone would know your business. A mile or so beyond the township, we turned down a side road and found a grassy spot where we could eat our sandwiches. We felt awkward, almost guilty. Why had we come? We spoke in low voices, avoiding each other's eye, staring out over the sunny paddocks. Do you think the story he told the police could be true? That he had a coughing fit and blacked out at the wheel? There is such a thing. It's called cough syncope. The ex-wife swore at the committal hearing that he loved his boy.